The next case to be heard is 2014-0170, Veolia Water North American Operating Services versus the Tax Commissioner. For the appellant, Mr. Lewis, when you're ready. No rush.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Harlan Lewis. I'm the attorney representing the appellant, Veolia Water North America. Veolia operates a wastewater treatment facility in Warren County. And this case is the old personal property tax and Veolia's application for exemption from that tax based upon operating an industrial water pollution control facility. Historically, the facility was operated by the governmental entities where the treatment plant is located in Warren County. So historically, it was tax exempt. Now, Veolia, as a private corporation, operates the facility as part of an agreement, a joint venture with the public entities. The purpose of the facility is to treat wastewater, to take in dirty, polluted water and make it clean. While it's complex and involved, and engineers figure out how all of it is put together, it's really that simple. You know, making dirty wastewater clean. As part of the decision, what happened here was that the BTA really gave this short shrift. Arbitrarily, with virtually no analysis, after letting the case sit for 3 years, we got a decision from the BTA that rubber stamped the department's initial determination, as I said, telling us very little and not interpreting the important statutory terms. Ohio Revised Code Section 5709.20L defines a tax-exempt industrial water pollution control facility. And it says that such a water pollution control facility is any property designed, constructed, or installed for the primary purpose of collecting industrial waste to a point of disposal or treatment. Veolia meets this definition as its primary purpose is to treat the very dirty industrial waste. In this case, it's our argument that the BTA acted unreasonably and unlawfully by using an improper definition of primary purpose. And the case really turns upon how you interpret that statutory term. By and large, the facts of the case are undisputed. The nature of how this works is that the pollution control facility takes in both industrial waste and residential waste. It was designed, and the statutory transcript is this thick and goes through the application, the evidence that was presented through the application, the tax commissioner process. It was designed for five primary industries in the area, which by and large are paper and cardboard production plants that generate a lot of dirty, gritty industrial waste. The facility takes in that industrial waste and also takes in a great deal of flow from the residential waste. What the department did was they looked at the flow numbers and seized upon the residential waste that came in and said, you bring in a lot more of the residential flow. So the primary purpose is to treat the residential flow, or their witness said the primary purpose is to treat both the industrial and the residential flow. But what the evidence showed is that the residential flow is a necessary component to treat the industrial waste. If Veolia didn't have all the residential flow coming in, they'd have to truck in water, and there was testimony about this. They'd have to add bacteria. And so what it allows them to do is be more efficient in treating the industrial waste, which was the primary purpose.
Now, does Veolia have separate contracts to treat residential waste from those to treat, or are there individual contracts with the entities that produce the wastewater?
The contracts are with the various municipalities.
Okay.
And it's part of this arrangement, and within the governmental entities are both these primary industries that it was designed and built to address, but also then the local, the residents. And what happens in illustrating the difference between the industrial waste and the residential waste, that Joe Hart, who was the manager of the facility, the wastewater treatment facility, he was really colorful in describing the waste. And he said, you know, the industrial waste, it is this, he called it Captain Nasty. It is this gritty, smelly, thick, dark. He said it's like gritty chocolate pudding and kind of, you know, a sludge. And because it treats cardboard and paper, it's got all kinds of waste contaminants that are floating within it. Whereas in comparison, the residential waste is light brown in color. There's not much grit to it. There's not much real substance to it. And it acts as a diluting factor. And so where we think the department made its error, and the BTA rubber stamped it, is not looking at the functionality. And the department's witness was very candid. He said, you know, we made this determination based upon flow because that was the easy thing for us to measure. And the way I like to think of this, Your Honor, is it's kind of like your washing machine at home. You have a basin that's going to treat whatever dirty is that you're going to wash in that. And the industrial waste is your dirty clothes. And one time it may just be, you know, the shirt that you want to wear to court. The next time it may be a week's worth of shirts. You're always going to add in gallons and gallons of water, some detergent. The water is going to take up more room than the clothes. And we could easily measure it each time and say, well, there's more water in here, so we're washing for the purpose of circulating the water. But the water's the vehicle that cleans the contaminants, that cleans whatever the waste is there. And so just by looking at flow, we're measuring the wrong thing, and we're not focusing on the functionality.
But isn't the difference from the analogy that the residential wastewater is flowing into this plant in order to be treated too? In other words, its purpose for being, it may serve the function of helping to mitigate the industrial waste, but its purpose in being there is to be subjected to a cleaning procedure itself, isn't it?
Well, its purpose is twofold, certainly. It does get cleaned through the process. Its larger purpose is to allow the dirty, nasty industrial flow, the industrial waste, to be cleaned. And there was a lot of testimony about this. And the way that Veolia described it at the Board of Tax Appeals level and also at the Tax Commissioner level was to say that dilution is the solution to controlling pollution. And you're right. It does both. But ultimately, when we look at what's the primary purpose, we believe that primary purpose is to treat the gritty, nasty industrial waste. And there are measurements that support that, Your Honor. And in the statutory transcript, Veolia looked at the concentration of pollutants in the year of application, which was 2005. And they looked at pollutants called TSS, total suspended solids. And there, during that year, they found that the concentration of TSS in the industrial waste was more than 23 times that of what was in the residential waste. And that's even considering for the fact that you had a lot more residential flow coming in. The second pollutant that they looked at was a pollutant called COD, and that is chemical oxygen demand. And there they found that the measure of the pollutants in the industrial waste was more than 35 times higher than what was in the industrial waste. And again, that's taking into account the greater flow. So you're right, the process does clean the residential waste as well as the industrial waste, but the industrial waste, even at lower volumes, is so much more concentrated that the only way to do this efficiently is to add all of that residential waste.
Let me ask you, so the relief that you're ultimately seeking, is it to have 100% of all the property at issue qualify as a pollution control facility, or is it some percentage, a higher percentage than the commissioner found?
It is 100% because the question is, you know, what's the primary purpose? And we believe once you cross that threshold, that it is an exempt facility. And looking at those numbers, if you look at the inverse and there was, you know, measurements at different times, the industrial contaminants make up anywhere from 94 to 98% of the contaminants treated in the facility, and that's found in the statutory transcript. Now, there's going to be some fluctuation because, you know, it doesn't flow in at a level amount. Circumstances change. Just in, you know, using the washing machine example, sometimes you put in one shirt, sometimes you put in 10. So the numbers are going to change, but what's undisputed is that there are always vastly more industrial pollutants that are being treated rather than residential pollutants. And so for that reason, we ask that the BTA's decision be overturned, that this court define primary purpose based on its functionality, and I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Can I just, before you do reserve the remainder of your time, ask you, there were some issues about supplemental information and whether it was provided to the EPA. Could you just briefly discuss that?
Yes, certainly. The process was that the Veolia submitted its application in 2005. Then the EPA then reviewed that application, made an initial determination. Veolia objected, asked for a hearing at the Department of Taxation level. In 2007, they had that hearing, and they presented a lot of information, a lot of the data that I gave you here today, Your Honor, the history of the facility, and the discussion that dilution is the solution to pollution. And the EPA never got that information. The department says, well, you know, Veolia didn't ask for the department to give that to the EPA. And in our view, that really, you know, shifts the burden. If the department is going to do a meaningful analysis of the information, they need to have somebody qualified to do that. The EPA witness that the department called said, yeah, I don't know what the department was thinking. I would have liked to have seen the information. This would have been helpful and answering some of your questions. And so part of our concern, part of our problem is, even though this has gone on for 10 years now, Your Honor, our client's really never gotten its day in court in a meaningful way, because the EPA that was supposed to be part of the process and look at all the information never got to do so. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Ms. Hussein.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. So the issue in this appeal is whether Veolia's denial of exemption was reasonable and lawful, and it was, mainly for two reasons. One, because this wastewater treatment facility is not primarily designed, constructed, and is installed to treat industrial waste. And two, it's not exclusively used to treat industrial waste. And Veolia has made no showing that this wastewater treatment facility was primarily or exclusively used to treat industrial waste, as that term is defined in the revised code. 5709.20L provides the standard for certification for being designated as an exempt water pollution control facility, and it requires primarily for the facility to be used to treat industrial waste. And then the revised code provides a specific definition of what industrial waste is. And that definition describes, it's based upon the source of the waste, not the level of pollutants or the concentration of pollutants in the waste. It says specifically that industrial waste is solid, liquid, or gas waste substance resulting from the process of industry, manufacture, trade, or business. And then even the revised code provides specific definitions for the other types of waste that are being treated at this facility. It says that household waste commonly derived from residential or commercial facilities is defined as sewage. And these are terms that are not just used in the exemption context. They're used for setting the duties and responsibilities for the EPA regarding wastewater in Ohio and different sources of disposal into the wastewater system. And this case has actually looked at this exemption before in the Timken case. It was the exact same language within the air pollution control facility context. And in that case, this court said that it was reasonable and lawful for the tax commissioner to grant exemption to facilities or portions thereof that were primarily designed and exclusively used to treat or to carry out the exempt pollution control purpose.
Let me ask you, the commissioner's determination in this case, is this a 17% sticks out in my mind. Is it the case that it's 17% of five different pieces of equipment, or is it a case that there's 100 pieces of equipment and 17 of them are exempt? How does it work?
Well, what the tax commissioners did is, looking at the EPA's recommendation, since this facility is mixing the wastewater, the residential, commercial waste, and the industrial waste, they always typically, it's a longstanding principle of the EPA to look at the percentage of industrial versus non-industrial waste being treated or pollution. And so in this instance, the 17% of the waste flowing into the facility, there's monitors on all of the sources of waste coming in that measure the gallons of waste from all different sources. It's continually monitored as part of their business. And so based upon that information provided by Veolia, the EPA said whatever portions that are treating wastewater first and then will be given the 17% based upon the percentage of industrial waste as it's defined in the revised code coming in. So that's where that percentage came from.
And it's basically the 17% is being applied to equipment that is
actually treating wastewater.
Treating both industrial and residential.
Yeah, and then there were other items that they had put on their application that were removed right off for the first review because they weren't even treating the wastewater, such as desks and computers and lawnmowers. There's another case other than the Timken, and in the Timken context, this court also strictly construed the statute, and it held that it was reasonable and lawful when the tax to deny exemption under 5709.21 if the equipment or facility is treating the exempt pollution control purpose and then also doing something that benefits the business. And in this instance, Veolia's facility is treating wastewater from industrial sources, but it's also has a business contractual obligation to be treating the waste, the residential and commercial waste from the three cities coming in. So the design of this facility was not specifically for treating industrial waste. There's no testimony that certain aspects of how it was arranged was because this industrial waste was coming in. And then there were five industries known to be, going to be coming into this facility, but there were also three cities, Germantown, Carlisle, and Franklin, that were also going to be sending their waste. So it was designed to treat all of this together. And in fact, also, with commonly known, residential waste has fecal matter, which is typically not found in industrial waste, and that's why the water is treated with chlorine to disinfect it, and why it's oxygenated to not allow the bacteria levels to get too high because of the residential waste. So that's showing that there's part of this design of this facility was to treat the residential waste, and it was not primarily for treating the industrial waste. Regarding the information that Veolia claims that the tax commissioner failed to provide to the EPA, the statute 5709.22 clearly sets out the procedure for the tax commissioners. You know, once they receive the application for the first initial receipt of it, they immediately send it to the EPA with all the documentation provided, and that's what the tax commissioner did. It's on Veolia to provide whatever analysis they want to with their application, and they failed to do that. If they failed to provide their analysis of the concentration of pollutants to the EPA, that's not on the tax commissioner. And then once they got the recommendation from the EPA, the tax commissioner issued the proposed findings. They requested a reconsideration. And then at that point, once there was a hearing scheduled, the tax commissioner followed his duty to notify the EPA of the hearing. There's no requirement to invite the EPA, but the statute provides that if requested in writing by the applicant to have the EPA present at the hearing, then the EPA can be there.
What about the statement Mr. Lewis made about the EPA witness who said it would have been nice to have this information?
Yeah, that's a total mischaracterization of the testimony at the hearing. I mean, the witness from the EPA is sitting there, and he's being asked these specific questions on the studies that were presented to the tax commissioner. So, yeah, his response is, oh, yeah, would be nice to look at that to answer your question here at the hearing, but it was not his saying that, yes, it would have been nice to have that to issue a more accurate recommendation. In fact, he said that the EPA has never looked at concentration levels ever in any of their pollution control recommendations. And commonly what they do is they look at the percentage of industrial versus non-industrial. An example is the Liberty Waste case, which is dealing with this exemption for a landfill because they could get water pollution control exemptions for accepting industrial waste. And in that, they looked at industrial versus non-industrial percentage coming into the landfill, and they denied the exemption. Additionally, he said, if, we were to consider something like this, which they've never done before, he said the analysis that was provided was incomplete. It was not based on enough data. Looking at some other things that the EPA does, he was said that they required 5 years' worth of data for some other type of waste permit. And the data that was provided, the residential waste that was measured for the percentages, was less than 30 days' worth of data. So it wasn't sufficient data. It wasn't just analyzing total suspended solids and the CODs. That was not, and those two factors alone is not enough to even base any type of determination of the concentration of industrial waste. He said he needed something about ammonia and nitrogen and carbonaceous bio something, oxygen demand something, some more further analysis would be necessary.
Suffice it to say you have a different interpretation of that testimony from Mr. Lewis.
Yes. Yes. Also, I wanted to say that, the appellant, equates this residential waste to being the equivalent of water, just diluting the industrial waste with water. But it's not water. It's another form of waste that's specifically defined in the revised code, which the appellant is contractually obligated to treat. If we were to remove the industrial waste, there's no clear testimony on how this facility was specifically designed for treating the industrial waste, which is necessary, according to this court's case in Timken and Liberty Waste, which is a BTA decision. So, if you have no further questions.
Well, let me ask you one. Mr. Lewis said this is about the old personal property tax, but the certificate pertains to a number of taxes. It could have ongoing significance in sales and use and taxes.
Exactly,
and
yes.
Et cetera.
It's an exemption for real property, personal property, and potentially sales and use tax if additional equipment is purchased and added to the
facility. Is any of the property that's at issue, I don't know. Is any of it real property? It's mostly personal property, right? It's equipment.
At first there was more real property at issue, but they had a BOR case where they were had the valuation changed for some of the personal property was changed to real property. But the land is owned by the city, so that's not an issue. There's personal property, and then there's a few buildings that are like kind of shelters over some of the equipment. So any real property that was involved, it was denied exemption. And the board held that Veolia failed to present any evidence or any argument specifically on the items that were not granted exemption, the non-recommended property. If there's nothing further, we respectfully request for the court to affirm the denial of exemption. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Hussein. Mr. Lewis, you have reserved 20 seconds, but I'll give you a minute 20 seconds.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
I hope that's long enough for the wash cycle.
Very good. I like that. The department seizes on the term industrial waste. The statute talks about the primary purpose of collecting industrial waste. But then essentially what the department is doing is they're adding another clause to that statute that says, and there's more industrial waste than residential waste. And the key is, what's the primary purpose? Yes, measured by flow, there's less industrial waste, but that doesn't preclude us from saying that the primary purpose is to treat the nasty, more concentrated industrial waste. And so the definition of industrial waste is key. To touch on Timken, Timken really talked about its core functionality. And in Timken, the facts are different because it's not a pollution control facility. Timken, they make steel and bearings and rock bits. They added an add-on boiler. And so this is an add-on component to a manufacturing facility, which is what the department and the EPA sees all the time. And they almost never see these types of pollution control facilities because they're normally public operated. And so to use the analysis of what it impacts the building, you're looking at apples and oranges. But at its core, Timken said functionality is the key, and that's where we think the department and the BTA dropped the ball. On Liberty Waste, counsel did point out that's a BTA decision. That's not binding on this court. But importantly, Liberty Waste primarily talks about the absence of any evidence. Here, we had a lot of testimony at the BTA, a lot of testimony at the Board of Tax Appeals, a statutory transcript that runs hundreds and hundreds of pages. And so that was really an evidentiary case. And here, there's evidence where both sides now know that while the residential flow is higher, the pollutants from the industrial waste are significantly higher there.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you.
This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.